Made order for Wednesday, January 23rd. Welcome to all the members. This is actually our first formal meeting. I want to thank the members for the tour we took last Wednesday of the Department of Ag. I thought that was very informative. Today we're going to have a couple overviews. Before we get started, I think I would just like to thank members and let people in the audience know that we sat down with many of the members individually before early in the session just to kind of talk with them about issues or ideas they have in front of this committee, and so I think that that was very informative. What I would like to do is just briefly introduce some of our staff, and then I think I'd like to go around too and just let everyone know. I think this committee is quite unique in our geographic balance. When I met with each and every one of you, we have really every area of the entire state covered, which I think is going to be very beneficial. To the right of me is my committee administrator, Brian Martinson. Many of you know him. He's a longtime Senate employee, former committee administrator of Senator Metzen. My legislative assistant, Sarah Brady, is sitting at the table today. And we are very blessed in this committee. I've been fortunate to work my entire career with these two Senate counsel and the Senate analysts that we have on this committee. I think are some of the best in the entire building. So John Fuller is here with us, and Greg Knopf. And today they're not here, but when we do have budget issues in front of us, Dave Jensen and Dan Mueller will follow those because our policy tracks through to Senator Tomasoni's committee. Also, we have Craig Janicich is the majority researcher, and Lydia Loden, the minority researcher. And our committee intern for this year is Jake Hauschild, so he'll be here to help you too. So I think if it's okay with you members, I just would ask you to briefly introduce yourself and tell us the area of the state that you represent, and then we'll get on with the two commissioners' overviews. Why don't we start with you, Vice Chairman Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Matt Schmidt. I live in Red Wing, and I represent a big swath of southeastern Minnesota in counties of Goodhue, Dodge, Wabasha, and Winona. I'm very happy to be here today and to hear from our guests. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm Senator Terry Bonoff. I represent the northern part of Minnetonka, almost all of Plymouth, and the city of Woodland. It's a little weird to be on an ag committee, but I'm excited to be here and wearing my higher ed chair hat. It's so important with MinSCU being all over the state that I understand all these issues. So I'm pleased to be on the committee.
Glad to have you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Carla Nelson. I live in Rochester. And in addition to representing Rochester, I represent 14 townships in Olmsted County and the cities of Chatfield, Dover, Eota, and Rochester, of course.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Fong Ho is here. I'm the senator from East Side of St. Paul, District 67. And my interest is in job. And it just occurred to me that I belong in the right committee because last week when we took a tour, you know, at the Department of Agriculture and Department of Health, it confirmed that I'm in the right committee. You know, I'm already one step ahead. I'm a new senator, but I'm one step ahead in the topic of agriculture. Then 2011, I received an award for, let's say, urban engagement from Department of Agriculture.
Yeah. That's good.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Lyle Coonan. I represent District 17, which includes Kandi Ojai, Swift, Chippewa, and most of Renville County.
Mr. Chair, I'm Carrie Rood, and I represent the new Senate District 10, which is all of Aiken County and Crow Wing County, Brainerd being my largest city. And we have the distinction, unfortunately, as being the city with the highest unemployment in the state of Minnesota. And so this committee is very, very important to me that we bring the jobs to greater Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Gary Dames. I represent Senate District 16, which is Brown County, Redwood County, Lyon County, Yellow Meadows, and Lacaparo, and the other part of Renville that Senator Lyle doesn't have.
Thank you very much. And I think that you can see that we do have a very diverse group here. It's a small group, but nonetheless, I think the issues that are before us are going to be very important. And so I think obviously we're going to focus on agriculture, but jobs is a big piece of this and the rural development. And we also have telecommunications underneath our jurisdiction. So I think there's a lot of good work that can happen. And with that, and we'll just, Senator Eakin, we just briefly introduced ourselves and kind of told people of the area of the state that we represent. And
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm Kent Eakin. I'm from Twin Valley up in the northwest, and I represent all of Norman County and all of Clay County and 3.5 townships in Becker County. The two regional centers up there would be Moorhead and Detroit Lakes. So District 4.
Perfect. Okay, thank you. And today we're going to hear from two commissioners that are kind enough to be in front of the committee today to give a little bit about their department overview and then speak to the extent they can of their legislative proposals. So with that, we'd ask Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry, Ken Peterson, to come on up to the table. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ken Peterson. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. We certainly appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you all and describe the workings of our department, which I think is a very important one for the state of Minnesota. I've also brought with me several members of our staff, but who may be helping me out as time goes along. But one of the more important ones I want to introduce to you is our Government Affairs Director, John Rakowski. If you have any constituent problems affecting the Department of Labor and Industry, please contact either John or myself. John's phone number is 651-503-4592. And my number, and please call me if you have any questions, is 651-284-5010. We want to help you out. We know that there are issues that come up that affect us, that affect your constituents. We want to help you out whenever we can. And what I'm going to do is give you just an overview of our department and talk a little bit about just touching our budget and then talk very briefly about some of our legislative initiatives. But please feel free to ask any questions as we go along on anything that I may bring up, and that's probably the best way of handling it. The Department of Labor and Industry is first and foremost a regulatory agency. In the construction area, we regulate everything behind the walls, under the floors, and above the ceilings. We regulate also workplace safety in our state and ensure the proper reimbursement and medical care for workplace injuries, oversee on-the-job training, and in our newest responsibility, finally make sure that participants in professional boxing and mixed martial arts are safe and face a minimum of injuries. I believe you have this document here. It says Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. And I'll be working a little bit from that, not completely, but it can help you as a bit of a guide as to where we're going. Other agencies, which I'll be touching on too, like other agencies, we're using a number of performance measurements to gauge the success of our various programs. As I go through, I'll mention at least one measurement for each unit. First, I want to talk about is workers' comp. I think most of you are probably familiar with the idea of workers' comp. 2013 marks the 100th anniversary of the passage of the state's workers' comp bill back in 1913. And workers' comp is basically an agreement between management and labor that an individual who is injured on the job will not sue her or his employer in district court for her personal injuries, and in return for that promise or that agreement, the employer must have workers' compensation insurance to cover wage losses as well as to cover medical care that the injured worker may have. At one time, I was commissioner of this department back in the late 80s. Now, at that time, workers' compensation was very contentious. It was a very difficult political issue. It hasn't been since then, since a number of reforms were passed in 1995. And I think because of the nature of the reforms, what I think more important is we've set up what's called the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. That's composed of five members representing organized labor and five members representing management. It also has four ex officio members from the legislature, one representing each caucus, the House Republicans, House Democrats, Senate Republicans, Senate Democrats. And the way it works is that all legislation regarding workers' comp must be approved by that committee before the various committees in the Senate or the House will consider it. In that way, we're able to work out the various issues beforehand and bring it before you in a relatively clean bill that can you can know that both sides have agreed to and you'll not get involved with it. That's been sort of a gentleperson's agreement, but it's one that's worked pretty well. Obviously, the legislature can change its approach anytime it wants, but I think approach has worked well. We meet every month or two and discuss various issues. Likely, there will be a workers' comp bill this year. It will probably be coming to you sometime in February, early March. We have several responsibilities within the workers' comp system. One, we keep the records of all the injuries. Two, we ensure compliance of the law by the various insurance companies, lawyers, the others. We also provide alternative dispute resolution. We provide benefits to employees of uninsured employers. As you can imagine, there are some employers who, unfortunately, for one reason or another, do not have workers' compensation insurance. And so then what we do is we provide the payments to the injured worker and then try to seek compensation from the employer. Sometimes we get it, sometimes we don't. We also pay second injury and supplementary benefits to workers injured before 1995. Those are two benefits that are done away with in the mid-90s and the reforms at that time, but we still have a number of workers who were injured prior to that time who are still owed, we're obligated to pay them. So that's I think it's around $50 million a year we pay out. That slowly is going to go down. Probably by sometime in 2035 or 2040, we'll no longer be paying out those benefits because they'll either be ineligible or they'll have died off. We also, in some cases, provide vocational rehab to workers to help injured workers get back to work. There are about 30,000 reported workplace injuries per year in Minnesota, and about 6,000 of those are disputed. Those are the ones you're going to hear about, where the for one reason or another, the insurer or the employer may deny primary liability for a case or may think that medical care is unnecessary, that sort of thing. But those are the ones that go into our dispute resolution system. We try to work out the disputes as best we can. We've got a staff of mediators who are composed of former district court judges, lawyers from both sides of the workers' comp side, and also other experts in workers' comp. We do are able to resolve a high percentage of those cases. However, we are unable to resolve some, and they go to the Office of Administrative Hearings for a trial and then for appeal to the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals and ultimately to the Supreme Court if there are still remaining legal issues. The trend in workers' comp, for a variety of reasons, is for fewer injuries, but there are more disputes and higher costs per claim. I think the reason for the higher dispute, the reason for the fewer injuries is technological. We do different kinds of work now than we used to. I also think that the work of OSHA and other safety professionals has reduced the number of injuries. But we still have injuries, and they tend to be more costly than they used to be simply because of medical cost. And there's also, I think during the recession, there was probably some reluctance by injured workers to report their injuries. The medical costs and increases in the last several years are moderate, but they still amount to a lot. It's a $1.4 billion system. The expenses of the system can break down in three ways. 35% goes to medical care. 31% goes to what they call indemnity or wage loss benefits. And about 30% goes to insurance companies and about 2% for rehab expenses. Our workers' comp division has 124.5 FTEs. And it's paid for through an assessment upon policyholders that also covers the operations of our department as well as the Office of Administrative Hearings and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals, and most importantly, pays for the supplementary and second injury costs and as well as uninsured insurers. And that assessment's around $87 million a year. It goes down each year. I think since I've started, we've knocked it down about $3 or $4 million. Next year, we'll hopefully knock it down a couple more million. Our performance measure we use from the workers' comp section is one that's used by the Work Loss Institute in Texas and California, and they rank our workers' comp system in Minnesota as A+. They use five different outcome measures. Instance, workplace injury rates, cases missing work, median disability durations, delayed recovery rates, and low back strains. Minnesota, Utah, and Arizona are the only states that deserve this A+. So I think we're doing a good job. Overall, I think our costs are reasonably low, and we're taking pretty reasonably good care of workers. Obviously, in various cases, there'll be people who are dissatisfied, but I think overall we're doing a reasonably good job, and the legislature has done a good job. Our next program I want to talk about is Minnesota OSHA, and I think you're all probably somewhat familiar with OSHA. OSHA was set up after years of agitation in the 1970s when Nixon was president. And the idea is to try to prevent injuries before they happen. We have two divisions in our OSHA. One is called OSHA Compliance, and those are the inspectors that go out to a workplace, inspect it, and if they find something, some problems, they're the ones that issue penalties. We also have OSHA Consultation, which is just basically a safety consultants who will go out at the invitation of an employer and go through her his workplace and tell them where their safety problems are without giving any fines. The two units are completely walled off. I'd encourage any of you that have small businesses, particularly who are concerned with their workers' comp costs, who are concerned with safety, to call our OSHA consultation. It's a very good group. They're more senior people, and they'll give pretty good advice. And they are walled off from our compliance section, so no one will know about it. Minnesota has what's called a state plan. That is, that Minnesota's OSHA system is operated by the state. We can't have penalties exceeding, or that our standards must either comply with or be better than the federal standards. What happens there, we receive half our money from the federal government then, and we give half our money from that comes out of the workers' compensation funds. And the chief consequence of that has been we have more inspectors and more safety consultants out there, so I think we're able to have more safe workplaces. I think Minnesota over the years has been regarded as a pretty good program for workers' comp, one of the premier organizations in the country. We've pioneered in areas like right to know about toxic substances. Other recent issues we've had have been crane safety, construction partnerships. And one that's been sort of interesting, at first people, they wonder about it, but once you talk about it more, unfortunately for several years we were leading the country in window washer deaths. We had three or four people died in a 2 or 3 year period. And so what we did was the legislature last year passed some new legislation. We passed some rules that have tightened it up on four window washers. We think it's a much more safer profession now than it was in the past. And I think that's due to good work on OSHA. After that terrible workplace shooting in Minneapolis this fall, we've always done this. We stepped up our work on prevention of violence in the workplace. We've had a number of seminars and group meetings, and we're certainly available to go out to any employer who may have some issues. We can't stop everything, but we can help people try to identify those areas which may eventually cause some problems. Our performance measurement that we use there is a reduction in fatality rate from a 5-year average. Last year, we were 25% down in fatalities. And we also look at our percent of our consultations with small employers, and there's 96%. Once again, I encourage you, if you have people and constituents that have problems with the workplace injuries, have them call us up, and we'll get someone out to try to help them out, and there'll be no they'll not be subject to any kind of problems from us. But they will learn a lot about how to make their plant safer or their workplace safer. Our next area that we have is labor standards. This is one that's a typical thing done by state labor departments. Labor standards govern, under state law, we govern minimum wage, prevailing wage, wage and hours, overtime, that sort of thing. People, one of the areas we have most activity on people who don't get their paychecks. You're supposed to, in Minnesota law, you have to pay at least every 30 days. Unfortunately, sometimes the employer is unable to pay, or they don't pay, and so then they call us up, and then we call the employer and say, tell them what the law is and ask them to work with them. And usually we're able to get people to pay for those, to pay up for those employees. If they don't pay up, then we encourage those individuals to go in conciliation court. Labor standards has only got 11 employees, and they get somewhere around 20,000 inquiries a year, 17,000 phone calls, and 3,000 emails. So we can't be out there as much as we'd like to be. And so when possible, we encourage people to take the law and to use conciliation court processes or other processes. We think we're pretty successful, though, that last year we recovered $1.96 million in back wages for 63,000 employees. And so we think we're doing a good job there. And so if you have a constituent problem with an employer, tell them to give us a call. We'll take care of it as quickly as we can. Apprenticeship is an area that we would like. I think it's one of the best ways of training there is. It's unfortunately one that in this country we haven't used to the extent we should have. If you look at Germany, I think they have like 225 different apprenticeship programs, and basically to get a job in Germany, you have to go through an apprenticeship program of some sort. It works very well for that country. And as you all know, they have they specialize in high-end manufacturing and other things, and I think it's due in large part to their very successful apprenticeship program. United States apprenticeship program is concentrated mostly in the construction area. We're working on trying to extend that in various communities, work in manufacturing and other places. But we think apprenticeship is a wonderful program and one that ought to be encouraged. We have six employees there, and they're paid for out of workforce funds done at DEED. And our performance measurement there is that we're looking at percentage of registered apprentices that are minorities or women, and that's now 24%. And we're very happy with that growth that show, particularly in construction. It's not just an area for white males. It's for everybody. Construction code and licensing is our single biggest division. It came about in 2005. When Governor Plenty was governor, he brought together a number of boards, electrical board, the plumbing board, high-pressure piping, and put them in the Department of Labor and Industry. And there I think it's worked out reasonably well. We do licenses there. We license electricians, plumbers, high-pressure piping, boiler operators, elevator installers, and building contractors. We actually have about 125,000 licenses that are out. Most of those are for 2 years. And our personnel, also, we do some inspections. We inspect elevators, electrical installations, plumbing, high-pressure piping, manufacturing homes, and boats for hire. And we do, for electrical inspections, for example, we do 225,000 electrical inspections per year. A community can opt out of that system. Like St. Paul, for example, is the largest city that's opted out, but a number of other communities, particularly after the shutdown in 2011, opted out. They can, if they do the same standards, they can have their own people provide electrical inspections. Let's see. We also review plans for new public buildings. And we work with citizen groups and others to update various construction codes. Right now we're looking at the building code, the residential commercial building codes, the energy code, and the what's the other one we're doing? Accessibility codes. We're doing four codes, and we also will be starting with a plumbing code relatively soon. And we have 139 employees in construction code and licensing. The total budget is about $25 million. That's an area, construction code and licensing, it's completely fee-funded. So during the 2008, 2009, 2010 economic downturn, we laid off a number of people there because work was way down. There was a lot less construction going on, and now we're adding people back on. Basically, it's very responsive to the construction climate. We do have, I think, 75 private electrical inspectors who work under contract for us that allow us to expand and contract much more easily, too. And we also have 10 electrical inspectors of our own. But most electrical inspectors are private inspectors who are operating under contract with the department. We're very proud of our performance measurement. We're doing there is we're doing trying to do a lot more electrical permits issued online. Electronically, we started that work in, January 2012. Now 50% of our electrical permits are issued online, and our percent of license renewed law is down 25%. And it's interesting, for those of you who have maybe a plumbers in your family or friends, you'd be glad to know that 87% of plumbers renew online, and only something like 50% of electricians. So if you've got an electrician around, tell them to get back online. The plumbers are beating them out. The newest part of our department is the combative sports office, and that was given to us through the fine work of Senator Bonhoff last year. Actually, what happened was the office had never been properly funded, and they weren't charging. They really weren't charging enough, and I'll be talking about that in just a minute. But they weren't charging enough for their fees, and so they were running a deficit, and so it was turned over to us. It was an independent board. It was turned over to us. Now there's an advisory board. And we have one employee, and we're operating it, and it's worked out. I think we're working more successfully. We still have some problems, but it's going ahead pretty well. And the
Mr. Chair.
Management. Okay. Senator Bonner.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, thank you, because it wasn't it was something that nobody was standing up and clamoring for, and so we really do appreciate that you did that.
Thank you, Senator. Actually, it's actually been for me, it's been a very interesting just area to learn about and to learn more about this whole area of combative sports, the mixed martial arts and boxing.
Thank you.
Attended a great fight on Saturday that was had an epic quality to it. That anybody wants to talk about afterwards, please, you know, grab me. We also have a general support unit, and which does all the stuff, accounting, human resources, stuff that any group has. And I on our budget, which I don't think you have to deal with, but that's all been going to be transferred next year to the to Minute, and so we're losing, like, not all, but the technology people, which we're losing 16 people there. We try to keep our philosophy at the department is to try to keep the number of employees down as low as to keep only hire those people we need to hire and not one person more. I've tried to reduce the number of unclassified employees hired as well as in the other areas, and we'll continue to do that. But if we need the work to be done, we'll hire somebody. If we don't need to be done, we won't be hiring anybody, and we're trying to save money for both for taxpayers as well as the fee payers that pay a lot of our stuff. Very quickly, before I go into our budget initiatives, I just want to direct your attention to the bottom half of on page 2, where it says expenditures by program. You can see that projected expenditures, those are very similar. The single biggest item we have is workers' compensation benefits. Those are the supplementary and second injury benefits as well as benefits for uninsured employers that we pay out. And then construction codes, those are all fee paid. That's 19% of the department. Workers' comp, OSHA, as I said, paid for some by the federal government and some by out of workers' comp assessments. And 7% is other money that comes into us through like the contractor recovery fund and several other places. Our general fund is less than $1 million a year, and that's less than 1%. You can see also on the pie chart shows where our money, the source of our funds, and as you can see, the biggest single item is workers' compensation. That's obviously an important part of what we do in our department. Most of our money, now on the last page, I won't go into it, but most of the money that we do get in this department goes for external purposes, rather internal purposes. We have our agency total is $50 million. And the external total is $92 million. So most of the stuff goes to other elsewhere that we're acting as basically a pass-through, that the money's going to others. And you can see the listing of things there. I don't think I need to go through that. I would like to talk a little bit about some of our budget, legislative initiatives. And we'll be getting more detail as time goes along, too, and some of the other issues. But I'll quickly go through some of the ones we have The most important one, all of them are important, excuse me. The one that, this is on page 3 where it just says annual budget change items. These are ones related to the budget. One is a child labor initiative, the first one. The governor's agreed to propose $300,000 to go to a child safety initiative. What happened was, in Duluth a few years ago, there was a terribly sad case of a young man working at the Cirrus plane manufacturer. And through not understanding or not following the rules, safety rules there, he suffocated to death and improperly, didn't, as well as accidents, did not need to happen. We looked at it a little more. We find out that the teenagers have about 100 serious injuries per year in Minnesota. And that workers under 25, the work group under 25 have the largest number of workers' compensation injuries of any age group in the state. And that's because they're young, they may be a little more careless. We haven't done a good enough job, I think, on training. So what we're going to start on doing is doing something just at least for teenagers who are in the workforce and trying to do some more safety training, do an outreach to employers, to schools, and hopefully to young workers, to impart them the importance of safety on the job, that no teenager should ever have to die in the workplace. We'd like to see that never happen again. So that's why we're going ahead with that one. We're going to be proposing that one. Our next proposal, as you can see going down, is fee adjustments in combative sports. We'll be raising the fees for a number of participants so we can balance the budget of that office. To be raise the fees for fighters, for trainers, for announcers, promoters, and others. Then we get into the CCLD ones, and these are ones that are more trying to make them work better as opposed to getting more funds. Some of these we make more money, some more will take a loss. But we're trying to make our objective with all each of them is to make them more fair to the payers of rates. We inspect something like around 4,000 elevators a year, and the what we have a current cap on the inspections. It's 1,000 for a cap on fees. So that for an individual inspection. So that means is that those places would have lower expenses are subsidizing those with higher. So if you go in and inspect a facility, a licensed facility, like say a hospital or a hotel that has a bunch of elevators, they're paying less. And somebody who may have a small facility, a one elevator shop in a nursing home or elsewhere, they're paying more. And so what we're trying to do is lift that fee and trying to make the cost of the inspection be paid for by the cost causer. And we're just trying to make it more fair. That does have a result of adding $732,000 to our coffers. But we think it would be less cross-subsidization, and those who are causing the cost will be paying for them. We think that should be the goal of fees and inspections. You shouldn't be cross-subsidizing. The little guys should not be paying for the big guys, and the big guys should not be paying for the little guys. The next thing we want to do is in plumbing, we inspect public buildings and licensed facilities, hospitals, nursing homes, schools, places like that. That also has an $1,800 fee cap, and we want to eliminate that. And also, so you lower some fees and raise others. Right now, for example, if you have a group home, and you want to put in a new sink, you're paying $325 for it. Under our new proposal, you'd be paying $100 for it. And basically, right now, the small group homes are subsidizing the plumbing for the larger schools or for the larger hospitals. And so we'd want to change that to just work the cost out. So those people incurring the cost will pay for them. Then our last one, or not our next to the last one, is construction codes and licensing, a plumbing plan review. A plan review is before you build a facility, a public facility, you send in your plumbing plans and we take a look at it. Right now we have what we basically have a Lexus Lane. If you pay double the fee, you are promised that you will get your plan reviewed in 15 days or less. If you pay just the regular fee, you get it done in 23 to 25 days. Now, that doesn't make any sense to me, that just because you pay more, you should get more. Government is not in the profit-making business. Government is in the regulatory business and treating people fairly. So what we're going to do is promise everybody we'll get the work done in 15 days, as we promised people today, and we'll just charge everybody the same rate. And if we don't have, if we're falling behind, we'll hire people from the outside and bring them in to make sure we get them done in 15 days. This idea that just because you pay more, you get better stuff, that doesn't make any sense. That one facility is not worth more than another facility. And so we want to get away with that, get away from that. And with that idea, we're going to lose $916,000. But we think it's going to work better for our customers, our stakeholders, that it'll be a better result for them. And finally, there's a small one at the end, the bottom one's a wind turbine inspection fees. As you know, most wind farms, the wind turbines are engineered uniformly. They all look the same. Right now, we go out and inspect each one very closely, but they're all the same. The wiring's all the same. So we're going to be doing is at the option of the wind turbine owner or developer that we could do a plan review, look at it very closely, and then do a quicker review of the plans of the turbines itself, and that will lower their costs. But this thing will only be helpful to big wind generation farms. If you have less than 10 turbines, it probably won't make any difference for you. But if you have 50 or 100 turbines, it will make $20,000 or $30,000 difference in cost. So we think it would be worthwhile for larger ones, but I can't say it's going to make any big difference for wind energy in Minnesota. It just will be more fair in our mind and it'd be better. And so, Mr. Chairman, that finishes my testimony. We'll probably also be having a workers' comp bill and a department technical cleanup bill. And I know we, as you know, we administer minimum wage. I know that will be an issue that will come before this committee, and we'll certainly like to be involved with that. But that completes my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I think it was important just for members to know, too, we didn't touch a lot on the budget, but just that will flow through Senator Tomasoni's Environment, Ag, and Economic Development Budget Division. But I think it was helpful for members to know that a lot of these dollars just pass through our fees, and it's a very small part of the general fund. Commissioner, can we just go back a little bit to your OSHA presentation? When you talked about the difference between compliance and consultation, can you kind of give us a breakdown? I don't need to have exact numbers, but where that breaks out?
Mostly, the federal government pays 50% of compliance and 90% of consultation. However, their overall budget for consultation is a lot less than compliance. So we have about 70 or 75 employees in compliance and 15, 20, 25 employees in consultation. So consultation is a smaller unit. They generally are more experienced people that I think for some individuals that after 5 or 10 or 15, 20 years of being an OSHA inspector, they're tired of people, of giving penalties to people, and so they prefer to go out and just help them. And so we have our more experienced people end up doing consultation. And we really try to focus on smaller firms, because that's where the fatalities happen. You know, particularly in construction, you have smaller firms that some guy gets killed for being careless.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner, for your overview, and I think it's helpful. Obviously, we'll see some more bills come in, but at least we have kind of an overview. Any questions of the Commissioner? Senator Hurt.
Yeah, Commissioner Pearson, I'm just want to know, like, about the apprenticeship program. Let's see, what is the retention rate of this young people that?
Commissioner,
something like 75% of the apprentices in Minnesota are in construction trades, and so it's in construction. It's the construction trades is around 50% of retention, I think it's not just because of the apprenticeship program. I think it's because of people find out the construction's just not for them. It's hard work. You know, you got to go out in cold days and hot days and all the rest. And so some people find out it's just not for them. But it is about 50%. But in some of the manufacturing areas, it's much higher, and it's had big payoffs for certain some manufacturing and others that use it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
And next we'll move on. We're going to hear from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Commissioner Clark, welcome to the committee. And Senator Hur and Senator Schmidt are already professionals on this presentation because we saw it about 15 minutes, half hour ago in the other room.
Yeah, I guess if I have the liberty, I want to be blunt that if I had to declare today, it will be like Katie Clark Sieben Day, Commissioner Katie Clark Sieben Day, because she set appointment with me early in the morning. And then
Commissioner, with that, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Hurt. Thank you. I've never had my own day before, so. But I've had the honor of meeting with quite a few of you one-on-one, and I know many others we have meetings set up here in the next week or so. So I look forward to meeting those of you that I haven't one-on-one yet. And I do apologize for those of you that heard this presentation earlier today. I'll try to tell some different stories this round. But Minnesota is home to a diverse and resilient economy, as all of you know. We weathered the recession far better than most states. During the recession, our unemployment rate peaked at 8.5% in June of 2009. And just 2 weeks ago, our unemployment rate dropped to 5.5, two full points below the national average, and gives us the 11th lowest unemployment rate in the country. In addition, we continue to outpace the nation in annual growth in construction, information, financial activities, education, and healthcare jobs, and added a total of 50,741 jobs over this past year. This shows our job growth rate increased by 1.9%.
exceeding the national rate of 1.4% and putting us as the 12th fastest job growth market in the nation. While many economic indicators are positive, we, however, know there's still much work to be done. We have 168,000 Minnesotans that are still looking for work, and that's enough people to fill Target Field four times over. You should have an overview page handout of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Our mission is to enhance the economic success of individuals, businesses, and communities. We essentially have two divisions, an economic development division and a workforce development division. We're focused on attracting, retaining, and growing business, increasing exports, and attracting foreign direct investment into the state, matching skilled workers with the jobs in demand, helping Minnesotans with disabilities find jobs and independence, and supporting our unemployed workers and stabilizing communities. Our total budget is $812 million. For general fund portion is $81 million. About 50% of our general fund is our vocational rehab program. Our business and community development is just 28% of our general fund, and then state services for the blind at 15% and the trade office at 4%. And our workforce development is just 2% of our state's general fund. And our largest division is that workforce development division that's largely federally funded with just over 500 employees. And our unemployment insurance division is the next largest team. And our little trade office with 14 employees is the smallest department. In our economic development side of the organization, this is where the Minnesota Trade Office is housed. It's a $3 million general fund appropriation, and our business and community development team is $22.9 million of our general fund. Over the past year, the Trade Office had some good results. The state broke a record $20.3 billion in exports and has had export growth over the past eight consecutive quarters. So we're seeing some great results with expanding exports. This office did administer a STEP grant that's a program through the Small Business Administration that gave grants to small businesses to help them break into new markets and administered a $450,000 grant there. Our small business development centers, we have nine centers across the state. They provided technical assistance to 2,783 small business clients who established 143 new small businesses and gained more than $1 million in capital and created and retained more than 3,375 jobs. And some highlights from our business and community development team. This team was involved with nearly half of the 96 business expansions that happened around the state in the first 9 months of the year, attracting more than $650 million in investments and creating 3,000 jobs. And there's also $12 million that was allocated in angel investment tax credits, attracting $49 million in private investment for 70 startup businesses. So some really great work from this team. In total, our economic development team's 65 people, which is small compared to our workforce development side of the organization. On the workforce development side, our unemployment insurance program is housed here, nationally recognized for how efficient this team has been. They received timely unemployment insurance eligibility determinations, payments, and appeals. They were rated in the 85% to 92% quartile, so some really great work there. Our vocational rehabilitation team achieved 2,490 successful employment outcomes for people with disabilities, making this the second straight year since the recession that the agency exceeded its employment goals. So really, really great work. In addition, we've been rolling out a fast-track pilot and working with some of our workforce centers across the state The idea here being focused on credential attainment and helping low-income adults gain the credentials they need to be on that career path and be able to attain jobs that are in demand for the future, where they can climb that career ladder. So overall, just fantastic work being done by the agency. And I do have some members of our team here today if we'd like to talk with any of them. And in addition, I wanted to just share an update on the governor's budget announcement yesterday and which of those proposals fall under Deed's view. First is the Minnesota Investment Fund. This was a $30 million request for the Minnesota Investment Fund, which is otherwise known as MIF, one of our state's key job creation tools. And I should back up and just, when we look at economic development incentives as a whole and what we currently have and what other states have, we, in a recent New York Times article that looked at all states' incentives and how they rate, we were rated 39th in lowest amount of spending on economic development incentives. If you look at a per capita basis, we were ranked 46th. So we do know we're competing against states like Texas that has a $200 million closing fund. Michigan has a $50 million closing fund. And this is how economic development is working today, the reality of how it plays out. So with MIF, the recommendation is for $30 million. This program provides upfront financing to create and retain high-quality jobs in Minnesota. The loans are attractive to companies because they're offered upfront and can be used for capital expenditures, often for equipment purchases. Over the last 8 years, MIF has funded 53 projects, created more than 3,000 new good-paying jobs, and retained more than 800 jobs. The $30 million in ongoing funding for MIF is a significant investment, increases the size of MIF tenfold from recent funding, and we anticipate it will create 7,500 to 10,000 new jobs and leverage $800 million in private investment. The second proposal is the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and this is a new program. The governor's budget recommends $25 million for this program. This is a pay-for-performance program. So the company and Deed and a local partner would identify how many jobs created, how much private investment that company will plan, and have a specified amount of time that they need to meet those goals. Once those goals are met, then the company would receive a grant. Maximum award would be up to $1 million and would be based on how many jobs are created and at what salary level those jobs are created at. So this program would replace Job Z, which is set to expire in 2015, and we think provides some additional accountability and capped spending from what we previously had. But as the governor said, it's the first look at the budget, not the final look, so we welcome ideas. The third proposal is the Minnesota Global Competitiveness Initiative, which is near and dear to my heart. I previously worked in the trade office. So this is a $1.5 million increase for the trade office to allow that office to open three new offices in key foreign markets to help facilitate foreign direct investment into the state. 37 of 50 states have multiple overseas trade offices. 34 have more than one office, and 16 states have more than five. And there's some great statistics out there about the return on investment of these offices. Minnesota currently has one office in Shanghai. In addition, this $1.5 million, a portion of the money would be set aside for a Minnesota STEP grant to help support small business breaking into export activities. We expect the SBA program will not be funded for next year, so it would help us to be able to continue that program. And final proposal is the unemployment insurance tax reduction. Governor Dayton's proposal reduces the unemployment insurance taxes by $346.5 million over 2 years, giving Minnesota employers more money to invest in their businesses. The governor's proposal reduces the base tax rate from 0.5% to 0.1% of all taxable wages for all for-profit employers, giving Minnesota employers more company to invest back into their business. So with that, I'll just take any questions you have, or if you'd like to talk to specific directors within our agency, happy to invite them to the table as well.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Senator Bonnell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I was disappointed to not see the angel investment program funded in this. Can you just talk about what was the governor's thinking, why he would, you know, fund a new program and not do something that, I mean, the take-up was like immediate at 100%.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, committees, or members of the committee, excuse me. I'm not sure what the specific thinking was on behalf of the governor, but this is a program that we've seen some great success with. And it was brought up in a committee earlier today. So if there's any information we can provide, you know, we'd be happy to do so on that program.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bonnoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I shared with you in our meeting how important I thought that program was. So I'm going to be working on it. And so if you speak to other legislators who share that, please let them know.
Okay.
And then also, the question was asked by Senator Herr about the apprenticeship. And I know we spoke about the interest in the higher ed committee of really focusing on apprenticeships with regard to higher ed. Is there an apprenticeship component of DEED as well as the Department of Labor and Industry?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, not that apprenticeship program is housed in Commissioner Peterson's department that is funded through DEED, our Workforce Development Fund, those six employees. So it is housed there.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And just to follow up on Senator Bonnoff's comments, too, I think Senator Scoy was the one that brought up the angel investor because we know how important that was, and especially when we talk about some of these smaller businesses that's at gap financing, that really was a tough part. But I will say this to you, Commissioner, that I think that we're going to get to know each other real well in this committee because, as we've heard and as I talk to members, we're all going to focus a lot of our time and energy on jobs. And we understand that when I met with a lot of you, too, that there is competition out there, and we understand it's with North Dakota, it's with South Dakota, it's with Iowa, it's with Wisconsin. But having said that, I will say that it was encouraging that the governor, you know, really emphasized economic development in his budget proposal yesterday. So we look forward to working with you on many of those issues. And I think, too, that Senator Bonnoff's Committee on Higher Education and Workforce Development has a real opportunity to work very closely with this committee because I think that's really, at the end of the day, where we're trying to move these people through the system and get them those jobs that they need. With that, any other questions, members of the committee? Otherwise, thank you very much, Commissioner. We look forward to working with you during
you.
This session.
Likewise. And we do have an individual sheet for each of your districts just detailing how many constituents in your district received unemployment insurance or other programs that we have at DEED.
Okay.
So we'll pass those around.
Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Members, before we go, we'll make sure we get those individual handouts. They're nice. There's a lot of detail. Brian, would you like to just – you got a couple of housekeeping things you want to talk to members about?
Members, we're not going to be meeting next Monday. Next Wednesday, we will have a meeting where we'll be looking at a broadband overview as well as the broadband task force report.
And is there something in the files you want to talk about?
Oh, in your save file, there is a roster as well as a committee jurisdiction. And moving forward, any other items you'd like to keep in your folder, please put those in the save file, and we'll make sure that those remain in your folder week to week.
Okay. Thank you with that. If there's no other questions, then the committee is adjourned.